Okay, tonight we are in the middle of three parts, whereas we continue to talk about sanctification, talking about three important areas of that sanctification. So in the last session we talked about holiness of body, and tonight we're going to be talking about holiness in mind, and next week we'll be looking at holiness in our relationships. If you look at look carefully at the epistles that Paul wrote, and you see that just about every one of them, it starts off, half of this thing is a doctrinal explanation of the gospel, of God, of sin, of salvation, of the work of Christ. And then he moves in the second half to apply this and show whether this doctrine is practical. And he does this basic thing. He talks about changes that should go on with reference to your body, your mind, and your relationships. And so that's why we're following this threefold progression. So tonight, as we look at holiness of mind, we can immediately think of people who are unholy of mind, the Pharisees. They're noted for being really concerned about what was on the outside, but not so much about what was on the inside. And here's where we see the importance of holiness on the inside. So Pharisees, they did what they did to be seen and had little regard to what was underneath the surface of their skin in their heart. And they did things to be seen on the outside. So Jesus said of them things like this: "Rightly did Isaiah prophesy of you, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart, their mind, their inner being is far from me." So in ritualistic religion, it might seem like the outside is all that matters. And you can see people that get locked into ritualistic religion, they're all concerned with the outward ceremony and going through things like that, but they seem to be able to leave a place where they've had a ceremony and go out and just do any old thing they want to, or not be concerned about what's going on in their heart and what's going on in their mind. Before God, however, the inside of who we are is just as important as the outside. Think about how Jesus referred to those Pharisees as whitewashed tombs, saying, you know, you're all pretty on the outside, but inside you are full of dead men's bones. And so to that point, the Pharisees came to Jesus all upset that the disciples were not washing their hands. They said, oh, you might get the coronavirus. No, they were more concerned about spiritual uncleanness somehow being connected to not washing their hands. So they come to Jesus about that. And Jesus, though, told them that eating with unwashed hands does not make you unclean. It's not what you eat. It's not what you put in your body, in your digestive system, that makes you evil. It's what's already there in your heart that makes you evil. And so it is the heart with which God is clearly concerned. Pursuing holiness is a matter of controlling our bodies, but also controlling our inmost being, our mind, our heart. So look at with me in your handout at 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1. 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1, where Paul writes this: "Since we have these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from every defilement of body and spirit, bringing holiness to completion in the fear of God." Now, what should strike you, I hope, is that you've seen Paul makes this complete connection between body and spirit, that if we are going to bring holiness to completion in the fear of God, then we are going to cleanse ourselves outwardly and inwardly. So it's important then that we talk about this topic tonight. The Lord desires our inward beings to be as cleansed just as much as He desires for our outward self to be cleansed. So let's think for a minute about why this is. Why is this that the Lord is concerned just as much about the inside as the outside? Well, He sees what we think and what moves us to action as clearly as He sees the actions themselves that may or may not materialize on the outside. You know, sometimes what goes on the inside never makes its appearance on the outside. But what makes itself in appearance on the outside comes from the inside. But God sees it, whether it comes out or not. So what we think about matters as much to God as what we do. And we have got to embrace this. We've got to embrace it. We've got to understand that our thought life, that the things that we entertain in our minds, is every bit as important to God as is what we do on the outside. Ultimately, God doesn't merely want our actions. He desires our love and our allegiance. And actions alone can be a hollow expression of love. It's but hollow, it's not real. Because the heart is where it's at. If it truly comes out to please Him, then it starts on the inside. It starts in the depths of our inner being. And the mind is where the thoughts and intentions and motives of the heart happen and where they must be regulated. And so this is, we think back to those passages, the one especially in 1 Timothy, where the engagement of all kinds of effort to train ourselves in godliness is needed. Well, it's needed just as much in the mind as it is in the body. So let's apply our thinking to how we can engage ourselves with all of the imagery that comes out of the training in the gymnasium and pushing weights and running races, trying to increase our time, increase our strength, and let's apply that to this organ right here, the brain, the mind, and what goes on inside. So think about some verses with me that reinforce this whole important matter of the motives and the thoughts of the mind being important to God. 1 Samuel 16, verse 7. Remember when the Lord sent Samuel to anoint the next king of Israel? And He pointed to David. But first of all, when Samuel looked at the oldest son, he thought, he looks the part. This has got to be the guy. But then we read in 1 Samuel 16, "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart.'" He doesn't just happen to see it. He looks there. He is looking there because that's what matters. Proverbs 16, verse 2 says, "All the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirit." What matters to God is not how good things may look on the outside, but how good from which they come, the spirit from which they come. Then Psalm 42, verse 21 says that He knows the secrets of the heart. Psalm 139:1, "O Lord, You have searched me and known me." Not just You happen to know, but You've searched me. And when you go on a search, you know, you get out, you're going looking for something. And it's like when you go fishing, you are pursuing something, seeking to find it. "O Lord, You have searched me. You have looked me through and known me by what You see." Psalm 19:14. Where there's the plea of the psalmist, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in Your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer." Insinuation, God sees. He sees the meditations of your hearts, and it can be either acceptable or unacceptable. And so His prayer is that they be acceptable, because God looks there. 1 Chronicles 28:9, "And you, Solomon, my son, know the God of your father, and serve Him with a whole heart and a willing mind. For the Lord," that should be capital L there, "for the Lord searches all hearts and understands every plan and thought." Again, the idea that the Lord, He sifts the heart. He looks at it. He is that's what He's concerned with. And so the word comes from David to Solomon, that you should know the Lord and serve Him with your heart, with your mind. And then we have thoughts on this coming out of Matthew 5 as well in the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus, as He's preaching, shows that God's concern about the law reaches not just to the outward actions, but to the inward thoughts that relate to those actions. Adultery and murder are committed in the heart through the lust of the eyes and through the hate of the heart. 1 John 3:15 is where it specifies very clearly that hate, you're hating your brother, is the sin of murder. So hate within the heart is a sin that God, when He searches your heart, He sees, and that is just as important to Him a matter as is if you go out and strike and kill somebody. You think because you don't kill anybody, you're not a murderer. False. And God cares about the murder in your heart. So, heart and mind are important, and God looks to them. So, when God says, "You be holy, for I am holy," He's not just talking about what you do with your body, what you even just do with your words. He is talking about what you do with your mind. And so, that is why it's imperative we consider this tonight. So, let's look at three areas we need to really pay attention to. One is we need to watch our motives, because our motives often don't come out. The act of whatever we do that may or may not be sinful in its mere outward observance. Something that may look okay, and many people could think I did something that, that is such a good thing they did. But they don't know that inside the reason I did that could be very bad. Could be self-centered. That's very bad. Instead of other-centered and God-centered. So motives are the reasons we do what we do. And Jesus addressed motives in the Sermon on the Mount when He talked about giving alms and praying and fasting. Do you remember what Jesus said to do when you pray? Go in your closet. And what do you do when you fast? Don't go around looking like, "Oh, everybody, look, everybody, I'm fasting." Okay, don't do that. And when you give alms, what do you say not to do?
Let your right hand know what the left is doing.
Well, we said, don't sound a trumpet. But I think that's right. But he also said, don't da 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 da. Everybody notice what I'm doing. Now, why is that? It's because your inward purpose matters to God. Do you pray truly to try to please God? Or are you praying to get the attention of other human beings so they will applaud you for being such a good player? Something that Titus is doing these days, he doesn't talk a whole lot yet, but one thing he knows is yay. Yay! He'll do that. And it's like, whoa! So whenever he's happy, that's great. But so, do you want people to do that for you, or do you want God to be pleased? Are you doing it for Him or others? That is at the heart of the matter. Do you help someone who is hurting so you'll be noticed, or do you do it for the glory of God? If it's for man's applause, then the motive is selfish. It's self-centered. It's not just for men. You're not doing it for men. If you're doing it to be seen by men, you're doing it for you because you want them to notice and say what a good person you are. You want their applause. You want to be able to feel good because you depend on other people to feel good. People are your God, if that's the case. When we lean in that direction, people are our God, not God Himself. So, Jesus, there are times, let your light shine. You don't hide it under a bushel, but why? And again, in the Sermon on the Mount, you let your light shine so people see your good works and glorify not you, but your Father who's in heaven, Matthew 5:16. So with regard to our neighbor, this means we seek not our own good, but the good of our neighbor. That's what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10:24. Seek the well-being of your neighbor. And then a few verses later, he reminds that whether we eat or drink or whatever we do it for the glory of God. And that context is talking about, it's the whole context of that, is talking about being sensitive to others. And so your eat or your drink could offend, therefore you don't eat and you don't drink what could offend, even though you have the freedom to do it. So in that sense, even when you eat or drink, do it all for the glory of God. Your motive is to please God, not indulge yourself. Now, some of the motives that enter our hearts or that are there that often will come out in some of the things we do are envy and jealousy, or this inward condition of our hearts that affect our motives. Envy and jealousy are human, are heart matters that motivate us to sin against God and others by attacking or competing with them so that conflict erupts. If we look in James chapter 3 and 4, we find James talking in two different situations about envy and jealousy and how they cause conflict and every vile sort of thing. And so we must be on guard against being motivated by desires that war within. Holiness of mind then also involves holiness of motive, and we find out what our motives are when we ask ourselves this question. Well, you can say, why am I doing this? But that's a broader question, and I think a more pointed question that gets even more specifically at the matter is that we should ask ourselves, for what purpose or what goal am I doing this? What do I want as the outcome? Particularly, what do I want as the outcome in regards to God, to others, to myself? What am I trying to bring about by this action? And when you ask yourself that question, be honest about yourself and will to replace evil motives with those that please God. That's part of developing and working and pursuing a heart of holiness that honors and pleases God. So we need to watch our motives. We also need to control input. What goes into our minds, what goes into our hearts, is a matter of pursuing holiness, what we allow to come in. Now, what is already in us is bad. I mean, Jesus says, you know, it's not what goes in, it's what comes out. It's what's already there that makes you evil and that defiles you. But we can either add to that evil or not. And we can allow more of that to come in to just stir the whole evil pot within us by what we allow to come in. So we need to protect our minds by guarding them from what comes in. Well, what kind of things do we need to guard ourselves from? Evil talk. Evil talk corrupts. That's Paul warns us in the letters there to be careful about even talking about what the evil people do behind closed doors. Because why? Because you shouldn't even be wanting to think about that. By thinking about it, entertaining that, you're stirring up things, you're letting that come in. So words are some of what corrupts, and we need to shield ourselves. It's not like it's not a superstitious thing, but it's a serious thing. It says, you know, I have to be careful about subjecting myself to this, especially embracing it and listening, thinking, and letting it come into my mind, evil talk. And certainly visual images can be destructive. I mean, all kinds of visual images. We should determine not to speak of and therefore not think on the evil that the wicked do. So how does unholiness enter our minds? Well, music, false teaching, looking visually on evil, of all kinds of natures. We should avoid any input that glorifies evil or that provides fleshly pleasure of any kind that like feeds greed or feeds the senses in a sinful way, because and I think this is one of the things that our generation has probably grown extremely lax in. I mean, I'm thinking myself about some of the things that I don't even think a second thought about watching on TV or whatever. Maybe I need to turn that thing off more often. And really, but I certainly need to be on guard. And I certainly need to do anything that's going to make me drawn towards evil in any way, shape, or form. I need to put the brakes on. And instead make sure that what's being put in is good. It's going to help, not add to what the bad that's already there. So we need to control input. And then thirdly, we need to control our meditations. And this is really the big thing here. Motives are certainly a big, big thing because it colors everything we do. And we need to make sure our motives are good. But now meditations are what we think about. Just, we did this whole study last year on the discipline of biblical meditation. And you know, there's a whole lot of lessons that you could refer back to, and I'd be glad to give you copies of those lessons. But it just goes back to pursuing holiness depends upon our meditations, but our meditations themselves and what we intend to be entertaining in our minds and in our thoughts should be that which pursues holiness. For example, we think of Psalm 1, verse 2. What does that say? Anybody got? Psalm 1, verse 1 says, not to walk in the counsel of the wicked, or sit in the seat of scoffers, or stand in the path of sinners. But what? Your delight
is in the law of the Lord. Not those who meditate day and night.
Yes. They love the law, they delight in God's law, and they think about it all the time. This is their meditation. This was what they're ruminating on. And this, then, they're like a tree firmly planted by streams of living water that yields fruit. What's the fruit in the life of the believer? Holiness. Godliness, which is this, like God, like the nature of God, his purity, his kindness, his goodness, his love, all of these things. We'll never be omniscient. We'll never be omnipresent. We're not, but we will be, by his mercy, a reflection of his beauty, the beauty of God's kindness, love, goodness, patience, and all those things. And this is what we pursue. So we begin to, that's the fruit in our lives. In Psalm 119, 9 through 11, we should know that, right? We hear this almost every Sunday, Psalm 119, 9, right?
11. 11.
Oh, is it 11? Yeah, 11. Oh, yes. 11. Well, what does 11 say?
Your word I have hidden in my heart, that I might not sin against thee this morning.
Okay, and now look at the verses that lead up to that, because they're connected well.
Very good.
How can a young man keep his way pure? By guarding it according to your word. Okay, so that much, okay, now. In verse 10, look at how it puts an emphasis on what's on the inside. With my whole heart I seek you. Let me not wander from your commandments. I have stored up your word in my heart, that I might not sin against you. It's not just memory, but it begins with memory. But storing it up means treasuring in it and meditating on it as well as just knowing it. So we must control our meditations. And then there's Philippians 4, verse 8, which
whatever
tells us
things are true,
go ahead,
pure.
Why
don't I?
Whatever is
true, pure. I know there's eight of them. Yes. True and just and right. And if anything's praiseworthy.
Okay, turn if your Bible's there. And everybody in your own translation that you have. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Let your minds dwell on these things. This is where you should build your tent of thinking, is on this stuff. So, and this not only is then a direction, but this is also a provision of the key to controlling our meditations. You know, think about, what is a fantasy? Or if you say, I fantasize, what are you doing? What are you saying you do?
You dwell on something.
It's a type of meditation.
It's a meditation. Mm. Yeah. It's a fantasy. Anything you are, if you, but normally when people say they fantasize, they're thinking of something that gives them pleasure by thinking on it. Mm. Well, this is really what you should be doing with the Bible. And it's not a fantasy, though. It's not make-believe. This is truth. And the key to controlling our meditations is not by trying not to think what is unholy. Have you ever? I mean, I did this for a little while in my early years. I can't think that. I can't think. Oh no, I can't think that. And you know what I was doing? Thinking that, because I had to think it to not to say I can't think about it. As long as you're really trying hard not to think on something, you will necessarily be thinking on that thing that you are trying really hard not to think on. So when instead you are thinking on the excellent, the good, the lovely, the pure, the true, then your heart is absorbing those things and your mind is being guided by them, and you're too busy to be bothered with unholy thoughts. You've got too much space taken up with holy activity for the unholy to invade. So think about a pitcher, like those water pitchers over there. A pitcher always has something in it. Even when it looks like it has nothing in it, what does a pitcher have in it?
Air.
Air. And so let's think of a pitcher with air as being a pitcher with the unholiness that's naturally in our hearts. We can displace that air by pouring anything in it, pouring water in it, and then the air goes out. And if we leave the water or the liquid that's in the pitcher in there, the air won't be in there because something has displaced that air. And our minds are just like that. If you take the brakes off, if you take control off your mind and just let it go to nothing, you won't go to nothing. You will go to something that will be naturally fueled by the flesh, and it won't be pleasing to God. Now, how do you displace that? You don't go, oh, I got to get that. It's like trying to get air out of a pitcher with your hand. You know? It's not going anywhere. But you can get the air out of the pitcher by pouring in the water, and you can get the evil thoughts out of your mind by filling your mind with truth and loveliness. And but you know what it takes? Effort. You don't lay on the couch of your brain and do this. Even if your body's reclined, you have to be sitting up and sober and vigilant for this to happen. It takes activity. And so this is critical for holiness in our meditations, is this activity. And we would go back, really, we'd go directly back to 1 Timothy and to the instruction there in chapter 4, verses 6 through 10 about training ourselves for the purpose of godliness. Even training our minds and hearts, exercising, invigorating the brain with activity that fills it with God's thoughts. So those are the three things that really stand out to me when we look at pursuing holiness of mind and heart, is that we watch our motives, and we seek that in every motive the goal is this: to glorify God. And we control our input. We don't let trash in. And thirdly, we control what we think about, and we purpose to think, and we act to think, and we live to think what honors God. And then there will be a whole lot of good impact that comes out on other areas of our lives, our bodies, and our relationships as well. So in conclusion, I just want to give you this quote from Jerry Bridges' book, The Pursuit of Holiness. He writes, "All these attitudes, envy, jealousy, bitterness, an unforgiving spirit, and a critical and gossiping spirit, defile us and keep us from being holy before God. They are just as evil as immorality, drunkenness, and debauchery. Therefore, we must work diligently at rooting out these sinful attitudes from our minds. Often we're not aware our attitudes are sinful. We cloak these defiling thoughts under the guise of justice and righteous indignation. But we need to pray daily for humility and honesty to see these sinful attitudes for what they really are, and then for grace and discipline to root them out of our minds and replace them with thoughts pleasing to God."